Hi, it's Paul Ganger, and this is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Today, we are going to be talking about livestock, and we're going to go to the fields of Wyoming with a background in Montana. Shaylee Stewart, the new livestock market analyst for DTN. I shouldn't say new. She's been at it since 2019, but we find out how she got into that role, what she does on a daily basis, her home life, which if you're ever visiting one of the national parks, you're very, very close. Stop in, say hi. We're going to talk about packer margins. We're going to talk about the Stockyards Act changes that have been proposed. We're also going to hit her favorite. We're going to make her pick a child, her favorite child. So what if picking your favorite kind of meat and how to prepare it is, it's the same as picking a child. Let's be honest. We'll get into that a little bit in this week's MTOM Show podcast. If you have any feedback for me, hit me up at markettomarket@iowapbs.org or my email, paul.yeager at that's Y-E-A-G-E-R at iowapbs.org. Let's get into it. If you are not a livestock producer, or if you are, you might hear something new, and you're going to learn a little bit, hopefully, about the world of producing the food we eat. Enjoy. Shaylee, when you Google your name, I don't know how often you do that of yourself. There's a picture of somebody being proposed to at a baseball game. Is that you?
You know what? Baseball is not my fancy, and that is certainly not me being proposed to on the baseball field. But I wish her the best of luck, because whoever she is, she had quite the debut. That's pretty public. So I hope it all worked out beautifully. But no, that is not me.
Well, because I click on things and you're just like, well, I guess that's something to talk about. Usually in my trove of stuff, I've got some baseball. Because if it was, we'd dive into baseball probably more than livestock.
Oh, save yourself the heartache, because I couldn't tell you other than that they've got three bases, or maybe four. I don't know if you call the home plate a fourth base. I don't know anything beyond that. So we better stick to livestock, because if not, this podcast is going to get pretty short pretty quick.
Well, and like I said, I always start with something strange. And that one, I think the last time I was looking for a little information about you and that came up, I'm like, well, I have to ask about that, because everybody's different. But your background is you're a Montana. You grew up in Montana. Tell me where and what was that like?
I can't think of a better childhood. I was absolutely blessed. I was born and raised in southern Montana. My parents had an agricultural operation there where they raised commercial cows. They had a haying enterprise as well as trucking. So I got to kind of dabble in the business from all sides of the industry at a very young age, and watch them grow their young business and see the struggles and the trials, and then obviously the beautiful essence that it grows to at a very young age. So growing up, I was active in both 4-H and FFA and let those kind of shape my existence. Now, honestly, I really encourage and support folks to dive into those programs as they're readily available to them. And I just can't emphasize the fact enough that those programs are so pivotal in your career and in your trajectory of life. And so not only did I get to grow up living and breathing it, but I had some pretty astounding community members that really shaped me growing up. So I showed livestock. I was really involved with my FFA, and I loved the Creed Speaking CDE. And so nevertheless, that's kind of my background growing up. And then ultimately, I went to college at Northwest, which is just south of Montana in Wyoming. And I call Wyoming home now. And so Jimmy and I, my husband and I, live in northern Wyoming. You're probably familiar with Yellowstone. That's our next door neighbor. So we are about 20 miles away from Yellowstone's entrance. And it's absolutely beautiful here. If you've been watching the news reports lately, and maybe you're not getting our news in your neck of the wood, but we've had some fires lately, but most of the time it's utterly beautiful. And so today, yes, I do work for DTN as our livestock market analyst, and I'm utterly privileged to do so. It's been a great honor to serve our customers and to grow the livestock content. And then my husband and I, we run registered Semangus cows and have our Big Country Genetics bull sale here as well. So nevertheless, it's a beautiful life.
You have no time for baseball with everything that you've just mentioned. So there's no way you're going to pick up that sport. That's totally fine. Okay, let's go back to Montana real quick. I missed the sibling part. Do you have siblings?
You know, I do. I am blessed and cursed with a younger brother who is – Most certainly, I say cursed as a joke, obviously. But yes, I do have a younger brother. His name is Danny. We're about 3 years apart, so we've got to partake in the sibling rivalry, the sibling love, everything in between those two differences. And so it was fun. We got to, only being 3 years apart, we got to do a lot of the same things together. And so that made life, honestly, I can't think of a better way to raise kids other than together. So.
Is he sticking around the farm, or did you ever think about sticking around the farm and maybe taking over?
You know, that's a good question. And it's kind of funny that you say that because, you know, I told you just moments ago that I was active in both 4-H and FFA and that they were very pivotal in helping me understand who I am today. But at the same time, when I graduated as a senior in high school, I thought that unless you were going to be an ag teacher or unless you were going to be an agronomist, that there was no plan for you in agriculture. So I went off to school to be a counselor. And then later I continued to pursue my passions of livestock judging and judged in college. And that opened my eyes to a broader life. And so while I always had ambitions to continue to live out the lifestyle that my mom and dad allowed me to see at a very young age, coming back to the farm, I didn't know what that meant. And so obviously I knew that with the complexities in the agricultural industry today, that having a outside income was going to be very important for me. So I knew that I needed to pursue something outside of necessarily just being on the farm. And so nevertheless, Jimmy and I aren't necessarily farming alongside my folks or ranching alongside my folks, but we are blessed with being very close to them. And so they help us in many ways, and we're thankful for that.
When you say close, in your part of the world, close is like 4 hours away, right?
You know, it's the perfect distance. We're about an hour and a half away from my folks and an hour and a half away from his folks. So if you need to see them, you can see them in an instant. But I'm not going to see my mom and dad for 3 meals a day, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I totally get that. And my in-laws are a street and a half away now. My mom is 2 hours on the home place here. So I totally get it. But I know when you have the door of Yellowstone a good, 20 miles away, what's the temptation to go to Yellowstone all the time? Or is it seen as, it's Yellowstone, no big deal?
Well, obviously you have to go and partake. I mean, whether it's once a summer or however you like to do it, whether you're a sightseer who enjoys the summer or you like the snow and you like to go snowmobiling along the sides of Yellowstone, you know, everybody needs to go. And, you know, we go once a summer, but other than that, you know, we pretty much let the tourists take the beaten path and enjoy some of the off season when it's not so busy and the roads aren't quite as congested.
I get that. And last year it would have been really congested. I heard that the national parks were just swamped with people, and you might have been able to sell some of your rent some of your land for campers. You know, little side, you know, we're only 20 miles from the front gate.
Yeah.
You know, we've got water.
Absolutely. That wasn't a part of our story, but I think it might have been a missed opportunity. And so you and I should have chatted probably a year and a couple months ago, because I see that as a lost revenue stream.
That's part of the diversified nature of agriculture. We'll leave it at that. The job with DTN, that is, and we've had relationships with them over with Market to Market over the years with different people. And, you know, it's a site I read pretty much every day. What was it like, and how did the job come about to what you're doing now?
Oh, that's a good story, actually. And so I'm glad that you asked. So when I was in college, I was studying ag business, and I didn't quite know where I was going to fit in the world. And so I put some feelers out, and I got an internship with the United States Cattlemen's Association. And that's where my passion for the markets grew. And I really dove into understanding the complexities of the market, understanding or trying to help folks understand the taboo surrounding the market, and then ultimately diving into the cattle market in and of itself. So with that, I grew the platform Cattle Market News, in which I have on Facebook. You can search the name Cattle Market News, and I have a weekly video on there. And I wanted to bridge the gap between the stigma of the cattle market and not knowing and not understanding it, and then day-to-day producers, because it's so funny that there are so many individuals who have been in the business for years, if not decades, that feel anxious when they talk about the market. And let's just remember that the market is how they get paid once a year. You know, so you'll hear a lot of folks kind of get a little short spoken when they start to talk about the market because they don't know how to talk about the markets. And so I wanted to bridge the gap between the known and unknown between everyday cattlemen. And so we started doing these videos to do exactly that. And at the time, John Harrington was starting to have some health issues, and ultimately DTN was needing another livestock market analyst. And so my boss, Greg Horsemeyer, reached out to me upon seeing my videos, and then came an opportunity to work for DTN. And so it's amazing how connected the world is today and how a simple video can connect you with folks that are multiple states away. And so that's how my relationship with DTN began.
And one of your videos, I think I told you a couple of weeks ago, was sent to me by a producer in Iowa who watches it. And he wanted me to make sure I saw what you were saying about packer margins. It's almost like people want to talk about stuff like that.
It's almost like they want to talk about. I think it's all we want to talk about right now.
It is.
I don't know if you...
Well, I just want to start with, I guess, before we... There's people who listen to this that might not know the complexities of what a packer margin is. Why don't you give me a 101 on it?
Well, we could probably spend the next 42 years talking about the complexities of the cattle market and the complexities surrounding the different sectors of the beef industry. So I'll try to break it down in a relatively short segment for those who might be a little green in its knowledge. So when we talk about the cattle market and the beef industry, you just kind of think about cows and then you roll on. Well, it's not quite that simple because there are different sectors in the marketplace and those individuals get paid in very different ways. So the market is kind of broken down into these sectors. You have the cow-calf producer, who are the folks that have the cows, raise the calves, and then sell those calves before they go into feedlots or into a backgrounding program or into a grow yard. So number one, you have the cow-calf producer. Number two, let's just say you have the feedlot. And those are the places that you might be driving down the interstate and see just pens and rows of lines of cattle. And they are the folks that go ahead and feed the animal, feed the steers, feed the heifers until a specific weight, at which point they are sold to packers and then they are slaughtered and obviously made into beef products for consumers. So those different sectors of the market get paid in different ways. And there's a disconnect right now in the marketplace between what beef prices are bringing and what cattlemen are receiving. And so I know that for those folks who have been diving into the markets and really paying attention to the spreads of those prices, there's nothing but sheer frustration. As packers continue to see prices that have rallied those of 2020, which were astronomical and never seen before, the cow-calf producer is scratching his head wondering how he's going to pay his note at the bank this year, given the high corn prices, given the competition for land and lease values, given the high hay prices, let alone getting a paycheck simply once a year. So when there is a lot of heightened emotion around packer margins right now, just simply because it's such a short time frame in which they own the cattle, and then it's so grossly different from what cow-calf producers are getting paid. And so there is a lot of emotion in the marketplace right now around that matter, and rightfully so.
And it's caused an outrage online. I mean, I'm sure you see it in your comments on your Facebook page. We get several of them, and we don't devote, you know, a full half hour. I mean, we might only get into the livestock market for 5 minutes each week, but it's a passionate topic for people. There's been action with one of your home state senators, Senator Tester, Iowa, one of his, our state senators, in Senator Grassley, and a couple of others have reached across the aisle, and they've been looking at this issue a little bit, but also the Stockyards Act, a renovation of a century-old bill. Is that type of legislation going to help? Does it matter?
You know, that's a That's a heated, yes. I'm going to just go ahead and answer that question first and then digress into the other question that you asked. And it does matter, most certainly, without a doubt. I think one of the scariest things about agriculture right now is that we need to ask ourselves day in and day out as we're wiping the sweat from our brow, whether you're working behind a computer to make sure that you have the funds necessary for your ranching enterprise or whether you're, you know, working a shovel and changing water. You need to ask yourself whether or not you're doing enough, regardless of how tired you are at the end of the day, because the matters in which Senator Tester are going after and Grassley, they do matter. Because if not, this way of life that we dream and we aspire towards will not be here for the generations to come. And honestly, we're in the predicament and we're in the situation that we are in today because we haven't been doing that for a long enough time frame. The generation, my generation and the generation before me grew a little lackadaisical, grew a little complacent, and were passive in their marketplace. And so they lost some leverage. They lost actually astronomical, you know, amounts of equity, and they let the market just simply be something that they react to rather than control. And so these matters in which our senators are working towards are very important, as well as other things such as, you know, reshaping potentially the way that cattle are marketed. And I'm not saying that you have to be either for mandated, negotiated cash cattle trade or against it, but there are conversations that most certainly need to be had. And I won't tell you how to think, but I will tell you that you need to think about them.
Well, so what are there sources of knowledge that are good to tap into? Are there things we need to be reading? What do we need to be paying attention to?
I think that's the biggest thing. We it's so easy with the cattle market to, you know, when you market your animals once or maybe twice a year, you know, let's say you market your calves in the fall and you market your cull cows, maybe it's in the spring or maybe it's in the fall right with your calves, to kind of sit back the rest of the time of the year and worry about your hay, worry about the water, worry about the things that matter around your operation and forget about the marketplace. But realistically, you need to be tapped into sources, whether it's a video on Facebook, whether it's commentary online, whether it's, you know, the organizations in which you pay dues to. You need to be asking them and you need to be holding them accountable and saying, how are you helping me? What are you doing with those funds? And then you need to ask yourself, well, how do I genuinely feel about this? How does this affect me? And what does this mean for the long-term trajectory of the marketplace? So today, more now than ever, we are more connected than what we've ever been, and there's more resources for the marketplace. And so honestly, to be quite frank with you, staying attuned to the marketplace is simply a matter and it's a choice. And so just as you and I travel to the grocery store, we travel to go pick up kiddos, or we travel just down to the mailbox to grab the mail, I rarely go anywhere without a cell phone. And though sometimes I want to chuck it as far away from me as I can, we can tune in. And so it's a choice, and we need to be more diligent about doing so.
Well, yes, and I agree. But it is hard to swim in a marketplace where information does come at us and we watch every dime to nickel turn, and we might run out of antacids before trading day is complete when we see the way these run. All you have to do is pay attention to the last 45 minutes, at least in grains here lately. That has been, you know, that last 45 minutes to an hour of trading is enough to make anybody sick. So I've had some people tell me that you shouldn't necessarily pay attention to every single moment, but you have to pay attention during the day or at least daily. Where's the medium for you there?
You know, I think that that's actually good advice, because it can be quite tiring to watch the markets flicker and to trade emotionally. And, you know, you're talking about the grain market, but for cow-calf producers or feedlots or even packers, you know, you have to take those markets and realize that a gain in one sector might mean that it's actually a loss in another market. And so I'm not telling folks that they need to be attuned to the market and holding it in front of them minute by minute, second by second. But what I am telling them is that they need to be cognizant of the changes that are transpiring in front of them. And so, no, that doesn't mean that they need to watch trade every minute that it transpires. But you know what? Go ahead and click on at the end of the day, whether it's the 6 p.m. news in the market sector, or whether it's a 6-minute video on Facebook or online, wherever you find it. you need to be holding yourself accountable. And you know what, if you're not doing anything now, start with one video a week, then go to one every other day. And so I understand that, you know what, people have lives and that they have their own obligations and their own jobs, and they have their own things that they have to answer to. And that it's my job to monitor the markets, but it's not everybody's job. And so that can be a job of itself. So I actually agree with you that there's not a need for people to necessarily watch minute by minute, but I think that we can't lose sight and that we have to remember that habits obviously manifest upon one another. And so it's easy to let time slip by.
All right. I'm a producer in Nebraska or Wisconsin, and I'm just a small person. Yeah. I got 100 head. How do I compete against one of the big four who are global companies who are buying my neighbor is feeding for them, or the person a county over with their 5,000 head operation? How do I stay relevant and stay in the game?
Oh, what a wonderful question. And you know, that's a tough one, because there are a number of different ways that we can answer it. And there are a number of different ways in which one could go about that question, and what's right for one person isn't right for another. But I will say, today more now than ever, there are more opportunities. And so I know that it can be defeating when your numbers are small, as my husband's and I's are, to compete against large corporations and entities that far surpass what you have out your back door. And so what I would tell you, though, is to take a victor's mindset over a defeated mindset, and to get creative in how you're marketing, and find your passion in marketing. Figure out what your business is and figure out where you can find the biggest profits. Because like I said, what's right for me isn't going to be right for you. So whether that means that you dive into, you know, the consumer relationship in which COVID has really pushed, and you look at marketing beef directly from your ranch, that might be an option. Or heck, maybe you're in Nebraska and you might be able to become a part of that sustainable beef packing plant. That's a viable option, and that's something that's very powerful and that we've not seen done before. So maybe you're one of the producers that gets behind something like that. Or maybe you've got a neighbor who's got cattle very similar to yours, and you're able to put a load lot together and market them to a, you know, more advantageous place in the market, to where you can get higher prices. I think that we have to just open our minds, and instead of looking at the defeat ceilings that obviously are above us, we have to get creative and challenge ourselves to find different revenue streams that potentially we didn't see before.
I think Dan Huber said it, probably been 2 months since he was last on the show, and he says if the beef producer wants to do something about the large packer, it's build a plant. But nobody wants to put a plant in their backyard. I mean, you talked about the facility there in Nebraska. I just saw that another hog facility is going to go online in South Dakota.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's those types of operations, but that just isn't always an answer for everybody. And maybe it is a niche. Maybe it's someone who sells direct to their neighbors or in the community. I mean, we've both seen stories like that. So, yeah, you might not be able to go to the same packing house, but there are opportunities. And I think that's what agriculture has found. It's a bunch of entrepreneurs who figured out that, you know what, maybe I'm not the same as everybody else. I'm going to go down that path instead. That's exciting to hear, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that you hit a nail on the head right there, because even though we have a commodity in which we are marketing, we have to figure out how to differentiate our commodity as individuals. And so, like you said, you know what, maybe starting a packing plant in your backyard isn't what you want, or you know what, you don't have the funds to do it. But that doesn't mean that you're just a sunk ship. You know, like you said, this market and today's time in which cattlemen are kind of tired of how things have operated as they have in the past, there are more options. And so we just have to dig deeper and get more creative as, quite honestly, the market gets more complex and challenging.
Does livestock to you also mean lambs and poultry and hogs as well for DTN?
You know, I do cover the hog market, but that's pretty much my extent, is cattle and hogs.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we do on the show too.
That was a push.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing. So let's do a generality here. We're midway through 2021. What do you see as the biggest headwinds in the next 6 months?
That is a good question, because honestly, we were so excited about 2021 and we were just so thankful to be rid of 2020 But now as I flip the calendar and realize that, you know what, we're halfway through the year, I wonder where in the world did 2021 go? And where is this beautiful market that we were believing in? Because let me tell you, the first quarter wasn't anything of what we aspired for. We had great hopes for the second quarter. And now as we look to the third and fourth quarter, we have a lot of unanswered questions still in the marketplace. And so honestly, we're in a really pivotal time right now in the month of June, because especially for the cattle market, we have some big challenges ahead of us. We've had a slaughter speed which has not been adequate. Absolutely, period, end of story, no more questions. And so typically in the month of June, we see three big slaughter weeks. And honestly, throughout the year thus far, we've not been able to do so. So we're going to be looking for answers in the immediate future on how we're going to be able to move through the remainder of the year based on how our throughput is through the month of June. Looking to the hog market, you know, we are tight on supplies, prices are high, and we hope and continues to be as strong and robust as it is, both internationally and domestically, as hog producers are having a phenomenal year. So the cattle market has challenges in front of it, and the hog market has different challenges in front of it. But nevertheless, there is hope and there is optimism in the marketplace. For instance, I know that a lot of producers are quite scared about what calf prices are going to be this fall, because here you have a corn market that's not been this high since 2014, hay prices that are absurd, breaking out across the entire western part of the United States. And obviously that affects input costs all throughout the marketplace. So, but then at the same time, we have to remember that we do have a smaller cow herd in the United States, and that less cows produce less calves, and less calves means there are less cattle to market, obviously, in the fall. So there's opportunity and there's optimism in the marketplace, but getting to that price point, getting to those margins, and getting to maybe some of that market, you know, threshold in which we've not been able to see in the last couple of years is going to come with some challenges ahead of it. So honestly, time is the best answer for that. And with that, we most certainly need to be carefully monitoring the markets.
It is always interesting. And I guess I'll ask now a consumer-based question. For someone who might be listening to this, who's not fully up to understanding everything we've talked about, and if they've made it this far, fantastic, that's awesome. But when I go to the grocery store, you talked about the grocery store, and I know that this cut of meat has gone up. I mean, the traffic to the grocery store in 2020 was incredible. It's already fallen off the table. We're back to limited crowds in the store because we're all going to restaurants. Which is better for me, the consumer, and which is better for the producer? When it's hotter in the restaurant or hotter in the grocery store?
Well, I think there's trade-offs, and it depends what you want. And so obviously, to be quite truthful with you, producers don't want boxed beef prices as high as what they are right now, because guess what? Those funds and those extra, you know, dollars aren't being reciprocated in what they're getting paid. And that actually hurts beef demand, as consumers, you know, sometimes they check the price on the sticker and they say, you know what, I'm not willing to pay that right now. You know, you might go out and fancy yourself with a nice dinner and go ahead and just pay for the steak, whatever it costs, because you know what, some Friday nights just call for that type of behavior. And so nevertheless, the producer and the consumer and the relationship, and what can kind of seem like a distant relationship, actually is one that we've really seen work closer together in 2020 and hopefully continuing to do so in 2021. And so what might seem like two different entities and two different goals and hopes are really not as far off as what we think they are, because the producer wants to take care of the consumer and the consumer wants to know the producer. They want to know the product. And so we want that happy medium of where the producer is getting paid enough to continue to produce the most, you know, sought after, desirable cut of meat. But then at the same time that the consumer is hungry enough for it, that they're going to pay prices in which are rewarding to the producer. So do we like seeing these type of prices at the retail sector in your Albertsons, in your Walmarts, in your Costcos? No, we don't. We don't at all, because long term, it's not beneficial to the marketplace. And do we like to see consumers gouged in these price levels? No, we don't, because it's not beneficial to the marketplace over time.
All right, the most difficult question is my last one. You're going to the meat counter. what cut are you picking up, and what's the best way you like to prepare it, or your husband prepare it?
Oh, that's a good question. Well,
you have to pick
a
favorite child here. That's what I'm asking.
That's kind of how it feels, right? Well, we raise a lot of our own beef, and so I will tell you that we eat a lot of hamburger. So if I'm going to go buy something, that's probably not going to be hamburger, even though there's beautiful ways to cook hamburger. But I'm most certainly a ribeye girl, and I love it on the grill. I don't know about you guys, but we use our grill all throughout the year, and so it makes life easy. You get to cook a phenomenal cut of meat. You don't have any dishes to do, and it doesn't make the house dirty or hot. So we are grill people, and my product of choice is most certainly the ribeye.
Is the ribeye. Okay. Any marinade, dry rub, or a wet product?
You know, we're pretty simple people. We love some salt. We love some pepper. We love some garlic. You might put it in the refrigerator and marinate it with some Worcestershire sauce overnight. But that's pretty much the extent. I know that we might be considered boring, but quite honestly, we just want to make sure that the marbling is in that cut. And that should be all the flavor you need. Don't put all this other pizzazz on it. It's perfect as it is if there is marbling.
If there's marbling, we just came up with the name for the podcast. I appreciate it. All right, Shaylee Stewart, thank you so much for the time.
Hey, as always, it's an honor and a privilege. Thank you so much for the time today, and I hope you get to grill a ribeye soon. So take care. Chat later.
My thanks, Shaylee Stewart, for the time with DTN, and thank you for listening. Any feedback is always welcome. Market to market at iowapbs.org. Thanks for watching, listening, or reading. We'll talk to you next time.